But this book is sort of born out of my own desire to have answers to my own questions about startup careers. I've been in the startup ecosystem about a decade, and I felt really frustrated that I had all these questions about growing my career, and I was reading books aimed at founders, and I couldn't find any resources specifically aimed at startup employees.
Welcome to the Automate and Grow podcast, brought to you by Cloud Advisory.
Hey there, this is Michael Devolano, and this is an episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. I haven't published episodes for quite a while, but there's some really good interviews that I have in the kitty, so to speak, so that I'm going to get off my butt and I'm going to edit them and post them up. This particular interview is with Sarah Brown. She's written a book called The Power to the Startup People. Make sure I say it right. And Sarah actually asked that the video part of this not air, although I think it looks pretty good, so maybe I can change your mind on that. But at the very least, this is an interview with Sarah Brown. Hope you check out her book, Power to the Startup People. She has some great ideas around what to expect when someone's going to work in a startup, but also how you can be successful as a startup employee. Check it out. If you want to be interviewed in a future episode of the Automate and Grow podcast, I may rename it. I've started doing the Daily Growth Show, and I think that the concept of growth is more, accessible to most people, and the concept of automation is scary for them. And I think the conversations that I've been having anyway on the Automate and Grow podcast are around, you know, with experts and entrepreneurs around how they started up and grew their business. And it typically has less to do with automation. So let me know what you think. Leave a comment below as to whether you think that the Automate and Grow podcast should maybe be rebranded to be in line with the Daily Growth Show. And maybe it's just the Growth Podcast or something else. Maybe you think is another idea, like Startup and Grow is the other concept I had. Anyways, check out this interview with Sarah. Hope you enjoy it. And I will post up other episodes in the coming days.
But this book is sort of born out of my own desire to have answers to my own questions about startup careers. I've been in the startup ecosystem about a decade, and I felt really frustrated that I had all these questions about growing my career, and I was reading books aimed at founders, and I couldn't find any resources specifically aimed at startup employees. And I felt like I was translating these really great business books that were for other industries into startup language, but that most of those things didn't map. So advice books for business careers, just things didn't apply. Things about structure, about process, about leveling up, they all work really differently in the startup world. And after being in the startup world for almost 10 years, I felt like the one-on-one mentor conversations I was having were great. But they felt like everyone's experience was so different at different companies. And so I kind of wrote the book I wanted to read, and I'm actually really proud of how it's turned out, because I ended up interviewing dozens of people from the startup ecosystem, well-known venture capitalists who manage multi-million dollar portfolios, to startup founders, to startup contributors, people who I think are doing great work at the VP level, people who've grown their careers to the degree where they've seen acquisitions, they've seen failure, they've seen stuff go really wrong and stuff go really right. And I think just as hard as when stuff goes really right is when stuff goes really wrong. Sure. Or excuse me, just as hard as wrong is right. Because when it goes really right, how do you leverage that to get what you want for an acquisition or for an IPO? Or how do you know what to do in these big sort of events? And we talk a lot about founders and how to equip them with the knowledge they need to be successful, but we don't for employees. So I could go on and on. I mean, I literally...
Yeah, no, we'll do that on the thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
That makes sense?
Yeah, of course. So Power to the Startup People, how to grow your startup career when you're not the founder, right? Born out of your own experience. You're formerly from Denver and you're now living in San Francisco.
Boulder. I grew up in Philly, went to school in New York, and I've lived in a bunch of places. Most recently, I was living in Colorado and I was working remotely for a startup based in Palo Alto. So I was going back and forth from Boulder to Palo Alto pretty much every month or two. And the company I was working for also has offices worldwide. So I was going to Sydney and Kuala Lumpur and Santiago, Chile, with just as much frequency as Palo Alto. So I'm on a plane a lot, and I feel grateful to be in the valley right now. As crazy as the valley is, I feel settled in some weird way.
Oh, that's good.
I go back to Colorado a lot. I'm mentoring at Techstars. So I've been.
Oh, right.
Yeah, actually, I've been mentoring a company that just had their demo day 2 weeks ago, which is really exciting. So things are calming down there, although I'm staying on as an advisor. So.
And then what are you working on?
What am I working on? Well, I just published this book, so I sort of feel like I should take a vacation. It's kind of, you underestimate. It's funny. My process in writing this book was, I worked on it. I haven't really talked about this at all, but I'm pretty proud of the process. I'm going to put my pop filter down a little.
Why am I having a hard time finding you?
Sarah E. Brown will get you where you want to go. There's a million Sarah Browns. They're all.
Are you the author and CEO of Book of You?
No.
See, look at this. This is Sarah E. Brown, author.
Sarah E. Brown Marketing will get you a treasure trove of.
Check this out.
Wow. And I'm from Philly. This is insane.
I know. This is what I'm talking about. So I'm like, this does not look like you.
Just taking on my.
I'm going to say compliments on the new hairdo is much better.
You know what? No judgment of any other Sarah Brown's choice to how they want to present. Now, if you look for Sarah E. Brown, she seems like a lovely person. Sarah E. Brown, Building Connected is actually the company that I am with now. I'm running their content team. Yeah, you got it.
Why is it not coming up?
You just got it. I think you just had it come up if you search again.
Showing that lady again.
Sarah E. Brown, Building Connected. We go back to the top.
Is this you?
No. That's it. Oh, there you right are. There. Yeah.
Okay.
It is I.
Oh, man.
And sarahbrownmarketing@gmail.com.
Is it no E on the end, right?
No E. sarahbrownmarketing@gmail.com.
Cool.
And I will accept, of course.
I appreciate that.
You bet. Where were we? We were talking about something very, very important. Oh, right. So I wrote this book in about 5 to 15 minutes every day for 2 years. I'd work on it before work, after work. And my process was sort of, I don't care if I want to work on this, I have to. And I benefited a lot from the momentum and the sort of joy of having a lot of questions come up and then getting to interview people. So I would schedule these interviews and sometimes those would be what was keeping me going each day. But I really worked on it every single day. But towards the end of the process, when you get to the publishing final rounds, it's a lot of work. And I actually, I don't recommend this for anyone. I finished a job. I took a week off and went to Berlin just for fun, which was great. And then I came back. I moved back to California, back to the Bay Area from Boulder. I started a new job and finished my book within about a month. And that was painful.
Damn straight.
I didn't sleep.
Did you self-publish or did you go through a publisher?
I went through a publisher. I went through a hybrid publisher called Hybrid Global. And hybrid publishing is a cool model. I tried to pitch my book to a bunch of traditional publishers. And the way that traditional publishing is turning out now, it's sort of, did you self-publish your book?
I definitely self-published.
Yeah, you know, self-publishing is great.
Like, I'm not going to ask anybody for permission to do this.
Yeah, you know, self-publishing is great. I went the hybrid model because I knew that I was busy working full-time and I didn't have the bandwidth to learn how to do it properly. Mm-hmm. I hired a writing coach, Anne Jans.
Oh, wow.
I mentioned in the book. She's written a bunch of self-published books and she was really helpful, even just helping me think about the process. And for me, based on having so much going on, a hybrid publisher, you know, they're helping you. They give you an editor. They work with you. I went rogue on the cover. I hired a really well-known cover person who does some of the Amazon books. He's now with Stanford University Press. He did covers for some of the big houses. And Emma, who's part of his firm, Frontispiece, did the cover, which I think turned out great.
Nice. It's so much better than mine.
I don't know about that, but
what I did with mine was I crowdsourced opinion on it. So I created a bunch of covers and I sent it out, and then people told me what they liked.
Are you Canadian? Are you Canadian? Do you mind if I ask?
Of course, I'm Canadian.
Okay, great. You sent it out in this Canadian.
The proper way, like the Queen's English.
Got it. So where were we? Anyway, so. What I'm up to now, I run a content marketing team at a company called Building Connected, which is a software as a service platform in the pre-construction space. So anytime a big building is made, commercial construction, an owner, let's say the Salesforce Tower in downtown San Francisco, an owner will set one out through our platform. An owner will have the project go out and then general contractors will bid on it and say, I want to build this, I can do it for this much money. But they don't actually usually build it themselves. They hire a team of sometimes thousands of subcontractors to do the lights, the flooring. And this market has been using fax machines.
And isn't that crazy?
Yeah, and whiteboards. And so we have taken them to the cloud and it's been insane and incredible. And we've created a LinkedIn for construction where suddenly all these records are up to date. Instead of emailing every single person or calling them or faxing them your contact update, you now can just update it in one place, those types of things. And then people are building, it's a $10 trillion industry. It's insane. And people are bidding out billions of dollars worth of projects through our platform every year. So it's been a really fun ride creating content, trying to help educate this market. And also, you know, for me, I was, I love software as a service. B2B, I've been in B2B SaaS most of my career and B2B SaaS startups. And one of the pieces that has never really sat well with me is how so much software is really about Silicon Valley, and we're creating software for ourselves. And I really like trying to solve a problem that isn't just about making sales people's lives 4% more efficient. You know,
so real work. Feeling, like I've always
not, had not that that's not real work, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. So it's interesting you said that. So much software is made for the problems of Silicon Valley, right? Mm-hmm. Part of that's probably because, you know, you get funded by a VC, they have other people that are funded by the VC, and you get a built-in customer base you can start with. It's probably part of that. Part of it is probably too, like problems like in the construction industry aren't sexy. And they're a difficult customer to sell to.
Yeah, you know, I was speaking with our CEO, Dustin Devan. He's a really interesting guy. He's a thought leader in the construction space. He's raised a bunch of money for our company, and he's he's very strategic about building a really healthy SaaS business while also coming from a construction industry background. He has an engineering degree. He's a very, very, very sharp guy. And he said to me, you know, there's probably room to disrupt dry cleaning. Right. I'm sure dry cleaners need better processes.
Right.
In Silicon Valley, we get so caught up in ourselves and we think about, I like Kara Swisher's line, Silicon Valley is big minds solving small problems. And I don't know if I agree with that.
I think though, because I think everything, like if you're going to get funding, then you have to demonstrate that this is a big market.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think it goes back to sort of the reason why I wrote this book, which is thinking about the world we live in today and creating products and services through our startups that are disrupting industries and disrupting markets for real people and not just for ourselves in the Silicon Valley bubble. And as we're creating, I believe, a more inclusive startup ecosystem, we're able to then better reflect the reality of our world and people who need products and services that reflect their experience. And when we see a lot of issues with, diversity, inclusivity in terms of products that maybe, there's so many ethical issues now coming out around machine learning and AI that's, you know, discriminating against, I think Amazon just had a thing come out around their AI was picking out women in resumes or something. It was just in the news. And, I think that the more that we're able to give these, give these areas the wide variety of perspectives that should be thinking about these problems, the better off we're all going to be.
So much of marketing, and I do you consider yourself a marketer?
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's in my job title.
That was my assumption, but let's validate that. So much of marketing is really around what's the problem that exists in the world and who has that problem, which requires you to really like slice and dice and like the landscape, right? So you take the macro down to the micro. So like, how do you not isolate and attack a market and be effective?
Yeah. I used to co-host a podcast with Bill Cashard of Service Rocket, and it's been fun. He's had me back on the show to talk about my book, and we had our CEO of Building Connected, Dustin Devan, on the show, and Bill let me come back into the interviewing room with him. So that was really fun. So I've been on the show a couple of times in the last month, so I feel like I'm back on it, but he's done a wonderful job taking the show forward. But for a couple of years, Bill and I did this show, and the tagline is selling doesn't help, but helping sells. So we would bring on these luminaries in the industry to talk about how we're actually helping our customers achieve outcomes through marketing, through customer success, through even sales. And I think there is this focus on now, especially with SaaS businesses where customers aren't locked into these contracts, you know, where they're signing their name in blood and it's a year long deal and everyone goes out to golf and, you know, once it's done, it's done. It's now it's, are you providing value over a recurring basis? And if not, it's very easy to churn and to move on to other, sure, to other platforms. So I think, you know, on some level, I really see the comparison between customer success and employee success. And again, back to my book, I think the more that companies are creating environments for their employees, for their startup team, that enable them to reach their own career goals and enable them to grow and feel like they can be themselves at work and creating really an environment where employees can be successful, the more that startup employees are going to bring that energy to customers. And customers, sure, I believe...
My comment was more in response to having an AI discriminate and target an audience and try to have an outcome. Mm-hmm. And I think that I almost feel like there's like a false guilt right now because of a certain narrative that says that you can't, even on Facebook, look how the changes of Facebook as a result of that silly Congress hearings, right? Where they don't understand a platform and suddenly it's like the rules of Facebook marketing change. Because you're not allowed to call out an audience and target because it's unethical. But meanwhile, the whole point of marketing is to get the right thing to the right person. And the only way to do that is to understand them and then target them.
Well, I hear what you're saying. And I actually think you're bringing up a great point, which is I don't think these things are doing what they're not. I think they're doing what they're designed to do.
Of course.
Yeah. So the question is what they're designed to do really in alignment with our values as a culture and society? And do we really want to target only men ages 18 to 32?
Yes.
For the job? You know what I mean? So it's like, yes, this targeting exists and maybe that's someone's intention, but is that really, I think, you know, we're living in strange times. I mean, when is it not? But I mean, we're living in a time when data now is becoming such a big topic of discussion. Mm. Tim Cook recently, I don't know when this is coming out, but Tim Cook recently gave a big talk about privacy, and he's really advocating for the U.S. to push for privacy and sort of the wake of GDPR, looking at how Europe has approached this. I don't have the answers to these questions, and in my book, I really encourage everyone to think about, you know, Jeff Bezos and Tim Cook and these leaders of these big tech companies, but startups like Uber, you know, they're not acting alone. They're backed by a team that's making these choices. And I think we need to stop pretending like it's just these lone wolves that are pushing the industry. We're all contributing and we need to choose to work for companies that align with our values. And then just like the Google walkout yesterday, right? When a tech company is acting in a way that we don't agree with, it's not, I mean, there was leadership at Google. I'm aware of some friends at Google who said they walked out too, but this was a movement led by the people. And I think we need to start really realizing our power within the startup industry. So that's my other motivation for this book, is to help everyone figure out what they really want and to contribute their life's work to startups that are in alignment with what that is.
So how does, I guess I have this challenge in my head of, you know, you talk about AI or you talk about what I would call robotic jobs. And then we get into where you're supposed to conform to some standard, right? As opposed to creative work. Because I think the only way to differentiate between you and me and a robot is if I'm going to do robotic things and think like I'm going to lose. So how do you actually foster individuality and the contribution of that in a scalable way?
Have you seen poetry made by robots? It's terrible.
What is it called?
Any poetry that a robot creates, if you Google it, like what poem did Watson come up with? They have not gotten that quite right. And I think that there's always going to be this creative layer. There's certain jobs, I mean, we're talking about the future of automation now. I don't know if we'll ever have a robot be a plumber, you know? There's always going to be
that. I wish.
Maybe. I don't know. But there's a lot of jobs that I think could be automated. And I also think we're not... You know, I don't feel qualified to tackle universal basic income on this podcast or any of the discussions about, you know, I don't feel qualified to sort of have that discussion, but I think there are people who are in the ecosystem who really do have strong opinions. And I guess the other thing is I don't see, one thing with startups that's different from bigger companies is you can't really sequester who you are at work and who you are at home. Startups can be really all encompassing. And, and a lot of people, I think, choose to work for startups because they're sick of that political, you know, have one self at work persona, and then you come home and you're who you are, you know, Michael at home in a plaid shirt, you know, relaxing with a lion picture. You know, I don't know who Michael at.
This is a WeWork picture, by the way.
Got it. Okay. You didn't choose that.
In my home.
Got it. Understood. Yeah. I mean, I think we can't bifurcate ourselves and split ourselves in those ways anymore. And certainly not at startups. So it's not sustainable at startups. People see right through it. Our teams see right through it. So I think we're really at a turning point where we have to say, am I comfortable with what's happening here? Is this culture, you know, I'm seeing things that I don't agree with. Do I take a stand or do I just sort of let it happen? And I think one of the most important things we can do at startups is to be an ally for others. We all have positions where we can be allies regardless of our background. I am openly LGBTQ, I'm queer, and I am a white woman and cisgender, which means I, you know, can be an ally to people who, and I, you know, as someone who is not dealing with different abilities, you know, I can be an ally to so many different groups who, you know, just because I'm a woman and I'm queer and I'm in tech, and it doesn't mean that I can't do that for others and be a source of support for others and a champion for others. And also know that I know there's allies for me, right? And if we're seeing patterns in the industry where, you know, I think what is the percent? There's a conference that happened yesterday called All Raise, which was, I think, the largest group of women venture capitalists ever organized in the world. And that really inspires me, because when you look at the power in the startup ecosystem, and we've just talked a lot about startup employees, but it's, you know, where's the funding coming from and what projects are getting greenlit? And in some ways, I mean, working at a SaaS platform for the construction industry, right? I mean, it's, you know, VCs that are trying to raise up these other industries that are, have not been served by technology in the past. Mm-hmm. That's another way of, I would say, being an ally in the industry, right? We're taking care of a customer base that's been really ignored. So
at what point are we actually working versus just furthering our own individual causes and tribalizing everything?
Oh, Elon Musk wants us to go to Mars because I'm sure he has a personal agenda, you know?
He wants to get the hell out.
Who doesn't?
He's like, I'm so sick of this.
You know,
I mean, let's talk about what it really is all about. You know,
yeah.
Like, if I'm going to die somewhere, I don't want to die with you guys. I want to go die somewhere else.
Well, you bring up a really good point, and I talk about this in my book, which is, you know, I really think that you're going to be spending so much of your blood, sweat, and tears on a problem at a startup. It's not worth working for one where you don't care about the problem. And it doesn't mean that you can't care about the problem after joining. I didn't know anything about construction, full disclosure, before I worked at a B2B SaaS company. I worked at a B2B SaaS company that served other B2B SaaS companies and enterprises. And then joining a construction-facing company, I've learned a lot. I actually really care about this audience and I care about them deeply, and I didn't before joining. And I don't think you necessarily have to have that empathy prior to understanding a market. However, if you don't care and that doesn't change over time, it's just not worth it. And I think it's really important. You know, we talk a lot about upside for founders, like, oh, you know, it's, you risk everything, 90% chance of failure. But man, if you become a unicorn, that's, you know, you're in the history books.
Right.
I do feel that with contributors, there is that opportunity, but it's so rare. And anyone who's getting into a startup because they think it's going to make them a millionaire overnight, it's just not that likely. And I think you'd be much better off really focusing. And we talk about this in the book. We interview a few people who talk specifically about what to look for in a compensation package, what to look for when you're negotiating a new role. And a lot of those things are also tied to growth and learning and pivoting into a new industry, being able to uplevel your career by, let's say you were a project manager and you want to become a product manager. Startups offer a fantastic option for that. Whereas in a larger company, it's harder to try on new roles.
So you talk about in your book about working in non-traditional work environments.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like a lot of the approach to that is through the lens that we view through things, right? It's like, this is how I view the world. So this is how I'm going to deal with that chaos. So, and you're probably in larger organizations than I currently am. I've escaped all of that. What do you see as far, and there's a lot of complaints and static about that, but what's the reality of where, for example, where you work or where you see your friends work, are they really in non-traditional work environments? And how are people approaching that? Are they trying to force the company to give them, you know, their specific job, or are they understanding that there's a job that has to be done?
So I think your question, if I can get, and let me know if I'm misunderstanding it, but to get to the heart of your question, it's how is work really being defined and how much flexibility do employees of startups really have to shape that environment? Is that kind of what you're asking?
I think so, because I think there's two ways you can approach it. One is you can kind of demand that the job meet your lens of the world. Mm-hmm. And the other is, no, the company needs you to do this. Can you do it? And will you do it? And I'm curious what you're actually seeing. Like, how are people generally approaching these gigs?
Sure. I think it really depends on the maturity of the startup. And we talk about this in the book. There's different stages. There's sort of the, you know, it's funny. We define startup both as the sort of two people working out of someone's garage and the 300 person scale up that's eventually going to become could become a huge tech company like Google or Facebook, which, you know, they both started as startups. So your experience at a company will vary dramatically depending on the size. And of course, the earlier the company, the more the founder is doing multiple things. So they're being the head of sales, head of customer success, head of support, head of marketing, and then they start to hire those functional areas. That's typically how it works. And then the larger the company gets, the more mature it gets, the more process is put in place. So I'd say earlier companies, you do have more of flexibility in terms of, oh, there's a jobs to be done if we're going to use that framework. I see an outcome that needs to be achieved, or I see an area that hasn't been tackled. I'm going to go over there and figure it out because it needs to be done, not because I'm wearing that hat and that's my title.
Right.
And often that leads to a lot of growth. You know, if you say, like for me, I write about in the book, I saw a need where my company didn't have someone filling voice of the customer. We had a gap and I took it on in the interim and ended up owning the function as part of my customer marketing role. I ended up eventually hiring someone else to do it because I did it, built it out, and I didn't want to continue doing it, which is another thing I talk about in the book, which is that startups, sometimes you can get really good at something, but it doesn't mean you enjoy it. And that can suck your soul. It's like, sure. We don't talk enough about that.
It depends on the timeline of how long you're doing it too, right? Like,
sure. Is that something that you're good at that you don't really want to continue doing? At any rate, I found this need. I ended up overseeing it and it became a huge cornerstone of my role. And I really actually did enjoy overseeing that function. So I think if you're willing to come in early and sort of roll up your sleeves and say, oh, I don't know if this is the role I want as a title. I'm just going to figure it out later. And, you know, no one's written blog posts this month. I'm going to go write a blog post and figure out how to talk to customers. That can change your career.
So I think your advice then is to understand anticipate the needs almost of the startup and find where you can differentiate yourself. It sounds like part of it. And I guess that part of it is dictated by what environment I in. Are things being dictated to me that I need to do? Or is there just a lot of stuff on the ground? They're looking for someone that has the initiative to pick it up.
Sure. And I'd also say some people really do love process. I have friends who work at Google and they would be absolutely miserable in an early stage startup. And we talk in the book how to assess whether you're really the right fit for a startup, because I think you have to be really honest with yourself about who you are and what you're looking to get out of a work situation. You know, if you're someone who needs, I mean, from Google, it's very clear to get from L4 to L5, what the buckets are. You have your performance reviews and, you know, exceed expectations for a certain amount of time. And then you follow this process and then you're promoted. At startups, it can kind of be like, hey, maybe I should be a VP of sales because I'm going to be emailing a lot of customers and they'll respond quicker. Well, yeah, go make yourself VP of sales. I see that happen all the time, especially with sales. You know, you take these junior people, you give them the VP of sales title, suddenly that's their role, that's who they are, update LinkedIn, everyone's happy. And then they grow into it. Or sometimes what'll happen is you'll have junior people come in and they start doing a role, and then the VCs, you raise money and they say, oh, it's time to bring in adult supervision.
Right.
Someone who's done this before at a big company, a Salesforce. And we see that often too. So, you know, if you're willing to kind of overlook, if you're willing to deal with ambiguity and adopt what we call a growth mindset.
Right.
I did not coin that. We talk in the book about Carol
Dweck. Gretchen Rubin?
Carol Dweck.
Oh, Carol Dweck. I was confused in my head, but yeah, Carol Dweck, great. Is that
Gretchen, I think, is the happiness project. So we all Gretchen get branded.
The happiness project and Carol Dweck's mindset?
I think so. And Angela Duxworth is grit.
Right.
We're just going to keep going.
See, that was, you hit another word that I was going to bring up. So let's go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think, go ahead. What were you going to say about grit?
Well, I think what comes to my mind is grit is doing what has to be done, as a, even though the environment's uncomfortable and it's not what you want necessarily, right? It's like persevering in spite of being uncomfortable, right?
Yes, and in spite of, and also because of being uncomfortable. And we talk in the book, Sue Heilbronner is a friend of mine who runs Merge Lane, which is an accelerator for women-run companies. She says, you know, startup life isn't sexy. Someone has to clean out the fridge. You need a schedule for cleaning out the fridge. Like the highest level, the lowest level. And at the same time, I do think if you say, I want to be a CMO of a company, I'm going to start out my career and be, you know, willing to learn, and I can also career path. And I don't want to say that startups are all chaos, because if you have your sights set on what you want, there isn't necessarily going to be like that Google path where someone says, this is how to get from L3 to L4 to L5. But you can create that with your team and with your manager, and having a really good relationship with your manager, who may be the founder for a long time, and saying, here's what I want to achieve. And I know that my goals are over here. The company's goals are here. Let's align them and figure out how I can grow with the company. And as we're maturing, we'll figure out a way for me to continue to grow, maybe as an individual contributor or as a leader of a team. You know, you can have those conversations, but unlike at bigger companies where HR will hand you a memo that says how to do it, you have to kind of be proactive about it. And I think the people I've seen who've grown in their careers, my peers, people at other companies, have really taken ownership of that journey.
So I like, you've got to, so, you know, if I keep coming back to your book, obviously, this seems like a pre-education to someone that like wants to get involved in startups. And you have a chapter on how to be a stellar startup employee. So you kind of start out by giving the landscape of what to expect, chaos versus a normal structure. And then it's almost like this is your, how will I say it, the mindset that you need to go in and be successful, right? Mm-hmm. So out of this, like what would the one or two points that you would think would be ideal to latch onto for people? Like, what would you like them to take away from?
Sure. Well, there's that piece of growth mindset, the piece of ownership, of really taking control of your own career. And the other piece is really, it's about helpfulness. And I think we often think, how can my mentors help me? How can my situation help me? I really like thinking, how can I be helpful to my mentors? Mm-hmm. How can I, some of the best things have happened to me in my career have been because I've seen people in the industry I've admired and said, hey, I think I can help you with this. Like, let me contribute what I'm really good at to what you're doing. And as a marketer, you know, I've helped people prepare to give TED Talks and create decks for raising funding and think about presentations. And I've done a lot of work on myself to be able to up-level my own skills so that I can share them with others. And so the more that you can figure out what, and also I would say the helpfulness to your peer network is often overlooked. It's not just about who's above you. It's looking around you and saying, you know, if I want to be in this industry for 20, 30 years, 40 years, I mean, doesn't it benefit you to really invest in the people around you? And as I've grown my career and seen my peers, you know, growing and being promoted, and maybe we work together at one company, then they move and I move and we are at different companies. You know, we've created a strength in the ecosystem where we're there to support each other. I recently gave a talk at General Assembly, and I put together this group. It ended up being a panel, and I was asked to speak, and I said, well, let me bring in these other leaders I know who I think would really be great contributors on this topic. So one of my friends flew in from Colorado, and then I brought someone else who was at another tech company, a former colleague of mine. We had a really fantastic discussion. I think once you get to be at a certain place in your career where you can start to lift other people up, you know, the people who are going to do that for you are people who you've been helping along the way. And I think this spirit of giving first is something I learned in Colorado from venture capitalist Brad Feld. And I really believe that that benefits our whole ecosystem when we focus on giving to the community and providing value. Because at the end of the day, startup life is really stressful and it's hard. Mm-hmm. And even on good days, it's really hard.
Right.
Even when you're winning, you know, you're 25% over your quarterly projections, it's stressful. And if we're not here to support each other, to me, I mean, that's what this is really all about in the relationships in the industry. So as I'm thinking about kernels to take away from, it's figure out how to be helpful, Really manage your one-on-one relationships, especially with your manager, because everyone's busy. You have to assume everyone's in stress mode. The more that you can do to proactively help and provide value and make everyone around you have an easier experience, the more you can do that for your customers, of course. I mean, those are the companies that are winning in the market, is those that where customers say, oh my gosh, you know, this company, they help me do my job better. Like, not just achieve an outcome, but I feel like I've grown as a person in my role because I'm able to use HubSpot for inbound marketing or whatever it is.
Right. Yeah.
It's all related to me.
So that's great advice. I love it. So I want to be conscious of your time.
I could talk to you all day. This is,
yeah, I know, we could just keep going on and on, but
we can even get into the nitty gritty of LinkedIn marketing, which I know is your specialty.
Oh, happy to do another
rabbit hole.
So the one thing I wanted to ask you is, how are you, Sarah E. Brown, changing the world?
Oh my gosh. I'm a vegan. I'm just going to get on my soapbox. No, I, you know, sometimes I do think I've been vegan.
You're eating beetles or?
I'm vegan. No, I eat what the beetles eat. No, actually, I don't know what beetles eat. I don't think I want to eat that. I've been vegan for 14 years and I don't talk about it a ton in regards to tech, but I recently became a co-organizer of San Francisco Bay Area Vegans and Tech Meetup. And there are some really cool things being done to kind of help the environment, help the world around reducing our carbon footprint, reducing our consumption of animal products. And I do think that, so I've been mentoring a company at Techstars, a company called Nikola Power, fantastic clean technology, clean energy company in the technology space. And it's this Techstars cohort was partnering with the Nature Conservancy, where all of the companies were purpose-driven and trying to solve some of our world's biggest problems around sustainability. And I felt very impassioned by that. I think it's really important now more than ever that we are also conscious of how we're using technology for good and for solving problems. And I know there's a lot of movement too around creating tech that improves people's lives, doesn't just, you know, Headspace as a meditation app, things that aren't just taking us away from the things we want, but are actually helping create more of what we want. And so I would say the way that I'm changing the world, the way I'm attempting to change the world, is really to try to think about in my own life and as I talk to others, how we can really live in alignment with our values. And I'm not saying being vegan is the only way. For me, it is. And it's something that I find really gratifying to really, thinking of with other technologists in the industry about how to solve problems through reducing our footprint in these areas. But for you, that might be, I really want to work on, you know, something around solar. Or I really want to work on something around, you know, some other, making some other area of tech more efficient. Lyft is now working on reducing the carbon footprint of rides. So, and even within construction, thinking about how we can make the industry more sustainable by reducing waste, because the more that you create a better plan, or, you know, the project goes better in the pre-con phase, the less money is wasted on projects once they're being built. And it's amazing how many things go wrong once they're built, millions and millions of dollars on buildings that are mismanaged.
It's the inch that becomes a mile, right?
Exactly. And little things can become very costly. So the more that we can create efficiencies there, we're saving our natural resources and, you know, better using money and people's time. I mean, it's all related. So I'd say figure out where you want to make your own impact and what area are you excited to dig into, and then dig into it, because we need that more than ever now.
Thank you. That's a great answer. It's Sarah E. Brown, the author of Power to the Startup People. How do we get people in touch with you?
Yeah. So this is available on Amazon. I'm just going to keep holding this.
Such a pretty book cover.
Thanks. You know, it's funny. I made like the most rainbow book cover ever. A friend of mine, my friend Marshall Hayes, he's actually wrote about it a little in the book. He's CEO of a company called Amplio Digital. He's like, this book is, it looks so you, just the colors.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, I really think Amazon's the best way to get the book. SarahBrownMarketing.com. is my website.
Not Sarah E. Brown?
No. Sarah and Seb Marketing on Twitter. SEB Marketing on Twitter is a great way to reach me.
Okay, so when we have interesting guests on the Automate and Grow podcast, we like to have you nominate other interesting guests to be a guest on the podcast. So who would you like to introduce us to that you think would be a great guest for the podcast?
I've talked so much about Dustin, you have to have him on. He's a great guy too. I think you'll have a lot of fun talking to him. He's also one of the most knowledgeable SaaS founders I know. I think he's about to blow up in the Dustin Devan.
Dustin Devan. Okay, so Dustin Devan, you have been nominated by Sarah E. Brown to be a guest on the Automate and Growth podcast, and we will take that introduction.
Cool. I'll make it happen.
Michael, I appreciate you being a guest. So this has been awesome.
Yeah, likewise. Like I said, I feel like I could talk to you all day about marketing. It's been fun talking to you about the book,
and,
I think.
And you know, and we didn't go super deep into it, but the book publishing side as an author myself and going through, you did the hybrid model. So, I mean, there's probably so much we could talk about there, but we can schedule additional time in the future. So we could do a regular show. We're looking for additional content. If you want to do like a weekly show, let me know.
Oh, wow. That's a very enticing offer. We'll have to talk. Yeah, yeah.
We're going to let Maria, the intern, decide whether that should be a weekly show.
Okay. Well, hope you have a great weekend. It's really, I love what you're doing with the show, and you have a really cool audience. I'm really excited to hear feedback from people. If you're listening to this, let us know what you think of the conversation, share your two cents. I really want this conversation, you know, with the book to really extend out and for other voices to contribute. So please do.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And this has been another episode. I have no idea what number I'm on because I have so much content to catch up on. But this has been another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast with Sarah E. Brown. And we will see you on the next episode.
Sounds great. Take care.
This has been an episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. Check out other episodes for interesting topics on how to grow, innovate, and automate your business.